Welcome back to the Torbay Hospitality Podcast. We are so excited to have with us Carolyn Custerson, Chief Executive of the English Riviera Bid Company. Welcome, Carolyn.
Welcome, welcome.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. Oh, it's so good to have you here. And of course, Callum's back. We hope everybody had a happy new year. It's fantastic to be back here at Beacon Quay. The sun is shining and we are ready to go.
Yes, we're going to talk a little bit about 2023,
yep.
The plans for 2024, uh-huh. Which is very exciting, and maybe even looking a little bit further up until 2030. I think we've got some ideas for.
I know, that's a daunting proposition, isn't it? How did it get to be 2030 already? It feels like it was just a millennium. I don't know how that happened. So I don't have any shout outs today per se, but we have had so many pop-ins, I can't even take it. I wanted to, I guess, acknowledge that Beth stopped by this week, Glenn stopped by this week, Damon got in touch. Glenn actually turned up. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah, so that's good to see them. And then I think Pete's in town.
Yes, Pete's traveled all the way from Istanbul. He was such a good little... He's my cat, by the way, Pete. he traveled very well, very quiet.
Isn't that nice?
Great little man.
Pete's a biter.
He is a little bit of a biter. He likes to nibble.
How about you, Carolyn? How has your week been?
Well, I just, one thing, I prefer dogs. Oh, no.
You know what? My dad's always told my mom that he's allergic to cats.
Yeah, no, really? I'm a real dog lover, so.
Yeah, yeah. Him as well. But I think he's getting used to Pete. You know?
Okay, that's good. How about you, Carolyn? I guess you meet a lot of people in your kind of day-to-day.
I mean, it's a wonderful job I've got. I'm very, very lucky. I've been in tourism for 40 years now, and this has got to be one of my favourite jobs. I mean, the English Riviera, it's just such a special place.
And, it is.
You know, you sometimes forget there's over 1,000 hospitality businesses, you know, working together in the Business Improvement District, and... You never tire of the inspiration and the energy of the forerunners, of the people that are continuing to invest and have confidence in, you know, what is one of the UK's premier resorts. We have to all believe that. You know, I travel extensively and this is one of the UK's premier destinations.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what I didn't realize? You know, this is massive what we've got here, you know, in terms of the natural resources, the population, all of the businesses. And, you know, if you go from kind of, all the way from Hope's Nose. I almost call it Hope's Cove. Hope's Nose, all the way around to Berry Head. I mean, it's gigantic. I just can't get over how much you're responsible for.
Yeah, and I'm very lucky, aren't we? We're all very lucky to have such a great product. Yeah. And I think what's interesting to see is how the branding and the positioning is changing.
Yes.
To put us in a much stronger position because, you know, 12 years ago, the branding was English Riviera, Torquay, Paint and Brixham.
Right.
The branding now is English Riviera, naturally inspiring.
Yes.
And the naturally inspiring branding just gives us all so much scope. And post-COVID, you know, the great British staycationers are looking for the great outdoors, nature, wildlife, natural beauty, and we've got all of that right on our doorstep. But traditionally, we didn't promote that.
Yes, exactly.
We promoted ourselves more as a very traditional seaside destination.
Yes, ice cream and fish and chips.
And what we want to do is, the long-term vision is to promote ourselves as a leading coastal destination.
Yes.
To almost drop the word seaside.
Yes.
It's coast. Mm. It's about walking, it's about natural beauty, it's about beaches, it's about everything to do with coast.
Yeah.
It's about those boat trips, it's about seeing the dolphins, it's about seeing the seals. It's about feeling great when you come here. And most of the population that come here, the staycationers, are from urban areas.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to just experience any of what I've just discussed is magical for them.
For the mental health, I think it's really important.
Yes.
Especially someone who's, you know, let's say in London or in a really, really
built-up
place where the access they have to green life is a park, you know, something primmed and cut. And when they come here and you can go from, my favourite is from... Broadsands past Elbury and then on the way to Cherson Cove.
Yeah, it's magical.
That walk is incredible.
It is.
And it's not cut and it's not primed and it's just
wild and natural. Natural. Like you're saying, naturally inspiring. Mm-hmm. It's so true. And you mentioned just then like staycations. So what are some of your insights on kind of marketing for staycations? You know, you're a destination marketing organization, amongst other things. So staycations is kind of a relatively new word. I remember when I came here and say that I was going to go on vacation, everybody would correct me and say, no, you're going on holiday. That's what we call it. Mm-hmm. But I think staycations has kind of picked up the back half of a vacation and kind of traded off of that rhyming. And I wanted to see, like, staycations kind of came into its own during COVID, didn't it?
It did. Staycation is sort of holidaying at home, to the point it could be actually holidaying at your own home.
That's true.
It is a COVID. It came out of COVID, but it means holidaying in the UK if you live in the UK. But the market has changed, and I think the majority of businesses realise the market has changed. But the late booking trend is a trend we've never witnessed before, any of us, where you can literally have people turning up in the car park on the day of arrival and then, you know, phoning or booking through booking.com to come into your hotel that day.
Wow.
I know that the Hilton were actually gave me some examples of that. This is how late people are leaving it.
Yeah.
And that makes it very hard for businesses to plan on staffing, on food, etc., when you don't know exactly how many people you're going to be hosting. But within 48 hours, 4 days, people are looking at the weather forecasts particularly.
Yes.
You mentioned last year we had the wettest July in a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So people are looking at the weather forecast. Then they're looking at whether they can afford to come away because of the cost of living crisis. And then they're choosing to book or not book.
Yeah.
And the booking trend is the latest we've ever seen it. We've also seen the highest cancellation trends we've ever seen as well. So people will, if they are booking more in advance, they tend to book when they know that they can cancel and get a full refund.
That, yeah. Exactly. Booking.com.
Duration like of stay is shortening.
Yeah.
So we're seeing shorter number of nights. And then when they're here, affordability to spend on leisure products is restricted because of restraints around cost of living.
Yeah.
So, that is having a negative impact on the overall numbers that are coming, not just here, because I speak with my colleagues in Bournemouth and in Great Yarmouth and on the Isle of Wight. It seems all seaside destinations at the moment are seeing a slight dip in numbers and spend, and we've yet to retrieve the pre-COVID levels.
Yeah, 2019, I guess, was our last big year.
2019,
And do you have any figures for that? What was 2019 like in terms of like commerce to the area? Do you know?
It is around 500 million, which is what the visitor economy is worth to. Wow. I mean, it's the second biggest value with regards to economic value to Torbay after the health industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we've dipped probably by about 70 million. So we've got some way to go to get back up to it. But I remain really very, very positive about the future. I think the level of investment that's going on at the moment across the resort, private and public investment, we will retrieve it. And, we've just had the final figures for 2022, and we actually saw an increase on 2021, but we've had some very turbulent years, as you know.
I really like the destination management plan.
That's
the one. You've got some emphasis on rebuilding.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that you're not just looking at let's catch up to where we were.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a lot of emphasis on growing and then sustaining.
Yeah, beyond.
Which I think is really important, even when you're rebuilding, to have that vision in the future of, Torbay is going to be the number one destination for staycations in the UK. I think that's a beautiful vision and something to like run towards.
Yeah, and I think we must all believe that we can be the number one coastal staycation destination.
Yeah.
And the way we're going to achieve that is that we have to extend our traditional season.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that I've been keen to see the new hotels developed. And the reason I've been seeing is because they offer year-round employment.
Yes.
They offer career opportunities, skills and training by global brands. And it's all part of making our future more sustainable.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we can't grow beyond the 500 million if we stay seasonal.
Yes.
So if we just open our doors on April the 1st and close on October the 31st, we're not going to grow.
Yes.
But we've only got to all see what happened with Bay of Lights again this year.
Yeah, it was great.
It was amazing.
Well, did you know that we sponsored the octopus?
I did. You sponsored Holly. Thank you very much, Lynn. Yeah, you sponsored Holly and... You know, there were some businesses on the Illumination Trail that reported in a 40% increase in turnover.
Great.
As a result of the Bay of Lights.
Oh, that's
Illumination
amazing.
Trail. So it works. Yes. And if businesses get hold of it and promote it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know you recently interviewed Andy from the 25.
Oh, well, yeah.
They opened for the first time in December because of Bay of Lights.
Oh.
And they went out with their newsletters and promoted the Illumination Trail, all of the attractions, places to eat and drink. And they filled
That's
their
incredible.
December weekends. And That's they don't incredible. Normally open in December.
Yeah.
So it's about being creative. It's yes. about being doing things differently.
Yeah.
It's about being bold. It's about not dwelling on COVID too much more now. We're coming out of that and having confidence in the future because we've got an amazing, amazing destination.
So apart from Bay of Lights, how else do you get people to come in the winter months? I mean, if it's naturally inspiring, is it things like the Agatha Christie mile? Is it, what are the kind of attraction, like, attractions.
I think that's when the cultural offering does come in more, particularly in the autumn and winter, and also spa and wellness. So we've got in the destination, you know, with the opening and development of Lincoln Spa and what they've done at Aztec, at TLH. You know, these are year-round spas, adult only spa hotels that are. Attracting new visitors who've never been here before. So spa wellness goes very well in the winter.
Yes. Mm.
And also anything cultural. So Tor Abbey, Torquay Museum, the Agatha Christie legacy and the story there. We're offering guided walking tours all year round with Graham. So it's about thinking about why people would want to come here in the winter.
Yeah.
And that's why the cities tend to do far better than seaside destinations.
Yeah.
Because the culture.
Because their culture is so much stronger.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think when you're talking about spa and wellness, have you gotten onto this trend about taking like cold water dips? Have you heard about this?
The ER bid team are all apart from me. I have been summer swimming at Beacon Cove when I bob around. But the rest of the team are in the water. They were in the water this morning and yesterday morning.
Yeah.
And they are keen all year round winter swimmers. So I'm very, very proud of them. I go into the office and they're sitting there with their scarves, their hats, their woolly boots on, their hot chocolate, and buzzing and ready to go for the day.
Yes.
So they're going in with the thermometer, and it was 3 degrees, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe that. Yeah, I heard that there's a group that goes down to Tor Abbey. I've been invited along. They're called the Chunky Dunkers.
Yeah, so the Chunky Dunkers at 8 o'clock. But the problem is that's too late if you need to start work at 9 or a bit before. So the ER bid team are in at Beacon Cove normally about 7:30. So
nice.
If anybody wants to go down and cheer them on.
What is this? 7:30? Because I'm the neighbour now to Beacon Cove, so I can pop down.
You could pop down.
I've got a dry robe. I've got a dry robe. I've got my Stanley cup, so I could take a hot chocolate with me. And I've got, and I could just like walk across and go to Beacon Cove with the ER bid team. I can feel this energy. So
they say it's really, it's making them feel really good, but I can't do that.
It's there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it's really good for your health, not just your mental health, but also your actual immune system gets benefited from it quite a lot.
You're and in the sea every day, Callum.
It feels like a triple espresso without the caffeine kind of
So are you
muck.
In? Are you in at Paddington then?
Every morning.
Every morning.
Not every single morning, but most mornings.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they keep telling me how wonderful it makes you feel, so I just need to don't know, I just need to.
My sister got me into it, and I thought it was so silly before I tried it the first time. Mm. Actually, the first time I tried it was because she was having a bad day, and she's been asking me to come for so long. And I thought, okay, I'll do her a favor and I'll go with her, you know, please her this one time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went and I came out and I was just like,
wow.
Yeah. Okay, the favor was definitely the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. She did you the favor.
She did me a huge favor with that one.
So we've got some great digital campaigns that we're planning for this year, and one of them is on the water, which is a big one around all the things to do on the water. But with regards to we're going to be promoting wild swimming. That this is a destination for wild swimming, and things like that attract. Media attention.
Yes.
Sure.
They attract journalists. They attract influencers.
Yeah, influencers
that help us with our
one,
social
yeah.
media.
Yeah.
So it's about product differentiation. It's about making us different to what even Great Yarmouth are doing, and Isle of Wight are doing, and Bournemouth are doing. So I'm forever sort of researching what other places are doing and thinking, what can we pull out that makes us unique? So Agatha Christie is one.
Yes.
The birthplace of the world's greatest crime writer. Nobody else can claim that. And then obviously the UNESCO Global Geopark.
That's a huge designate one,
is huge.
Yeah. I don't think we make enough of
We don't make enough of it. And a lot of people might not even realise that we're the only coastal destination in the UK to have that designation.
Mm. Yeah. So powerful.
And it all sits so well with the naturally inspiring vision.
Yes.
That we want this, this place to be, protected and naturally beautiful. And the whole thing around the UNESCO accreditation, Stonehenge is UNESCO accredited.
Yeah.
So we sit within the same portfolio as a place like Stonehenge. And I don't think enough people are making, promoting the fact. And if you see it as part of our sustainability and as part of our environmental protection policies, then that's why the geopark accreditation is so important to
us. Yeah, it does have global significance, and it's such a privilege to live someplace that's so beautiful and, like you're saying, naturally inspiring. So you talked about UNESCO, that sets us apart as a coastal destination, and then also Agatha Christie, and now we might have winter wild swimming, which is really good. What other things do you think of that we could talk about with when it comes to our marketing to people that have never been to the English Riviera? Is there any is there any kind of thing that you're thinking maybe for the future? Or
there's a couple of things I'd like to do. One is walking.
Yes.
We've never promoted ourselves as a walking destination. So the Lake District does, Yorkshire Dales, Scottish Highlands, everything.
Mm.
We've got 22 miles of the Southwest Coast Path that actually border this destination.
Yeah.
And yet we've never marketed ourselves for walking.
Mm.
So post-COVID, with the launch of the ER Bid 2 business plan, and this, that the whole general public in the UK, can you remember when we were all let out for an hour to have a walk by Boris? You were allowed out for an hour, weren't you? Anyway, so more. The thing is, what's come of that is there's a huge growth in the desire to walk, to go walking. And coming on to one of Callum's comments we spoke about earlier, we'll talk about dog friendly in a moment as well, because that's another major opportunity. But so we've introduced the walking festival, English Riviera Walking Festival, that's attracting around 500 people each time we stage it. We're getting to the point now, because people pay for a walk, we're not doing it all for free, because we are engaging expert local guides.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it becomes a sustainable new product.
Yeah.
And then we can promote it through our marketing channels.
Yeah.
And that's going very well. I think, and looking to the future, something we'd all need to think more about is our cultural proposition, because we're currently missing out, I feel, a little. We don't have, in Plymouth, there is the box, and if any of you have visited the new box, but there's nowhere where there's a major art gallery or a permanent feature where you can go and see world-class works.
Yeah.
And I think we've got lots of temporary exhibitions going on. So Tor Abbey will have temporary exhibition, Torquay Museum, various, Cockington will have various exhibitions. But we're not known for our cultural products.
Yeah.
And yet, in the destination management plan, we've identified clearly that one of the growth markets is some a group of people we've called cultural explorers.
Okay.
So they're people aged 30 plus who like to learn about a place they visit. Mm-hmm. They don't just want to go and visit, sit and have a beer and look at the view, which is nothing wrong with that, but they want to get beneath the skin of a place.
Yes.
And to go away and feel that they've learned more about that place.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I understand that.
And, and so in the destination management plan, we've identified those as a major growth market.
Yeah.
And that's something we need to be focusing more on alongside the young actives, because obviously there's a huge uptaking in SUP, stand-up paddleboarding, and all the on-the-water activities. And that's another growth. So there are two growth markets we're targeting up to 2030, which is young actives and cultural explorers.
Okay,
and that's in addition to our traditional main markets, which obviously the family market will always be probably 80% of the marketplace here.
Mm.
But if we're going to grow, we have to attract new markets, and we have to diversify our product range to do that.
It's interesting. I noticed that, when you're talking about art, you know, I don't know whether I'm missing something, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of, like, public sculpture.
No.
Right. I know in Philadelphia, whenever you put up a building, you're required to spend a certain percentage of that budget on public art.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's a requirement.
Cool. That's awesome.
And so
I love
that's
that.
Why we have amazing things like the Love statue, and that you've seen, like the L-O-V-E. Have you seen it? It's like in a square. Yeah. That's in Philadelphia. Oh, sorry. That's in Philly. And the clothespin was in Trading Places, the film. Anyway.
That's so interesting.
But we've got, you know, it doesn't have to be classical art of, you know, kind of bronzes, that kind of thing. It can be kind of thought-provoking, and, you know, it could tell a story of a place, or you could use local artists. You know, there's a lot there, I think, in terms of, like, public sculpture that we could probably do, because we've got such amazing places. Why not have a sculpture trail? So we can have a literary trail, or an architecture trail, or, like, a sculpture trail. There are other places around here, because I think, you know, I don't think we realize, like, the... Because you can see Brixham doesn't mean it's nearby.
Yeah.
The reason you can see Brixham is because there's nothing in the way, you know? Yeah. So it's such a massive place.
I totally agree with you, Lynn. And I think a sculpture trail, you know, that's the sort of vision we all need to sort of agree we need to just diversify our visitor, our leisure product offering. Now, it's great with the Strand developments will come the Agatha Christie sculpture.
Yes.
Which is the bench with her sitting with her dog, Peter.
That's great.
And that's going to be will become a major part of the Agatha Christie Mile, which is a self-guided walk that we promote and is very attractive to international markets, particularly that's the mile from the Imperial to the Grand. But the mile per se is lacking in, it needs more, it's not a product that you actually sort of visually can see at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, we need to invest in making that a cultural trail.
So is the statue going to act as kind of a beacon to tell people the story? You were saying QR codes. Is that where you're going to have that main kind of attraction?
I know, you know, Matt Newbury is the director of the Agatha Christie Festival. We're looking at all sorts of things, whether we introduce talking benches along the mile, whereby you would sit on the benches and then you start to hear. You know, we need to tell the whole story, the Agatha Christie story, and that people can partake in it, and if they're international need translation, that they can access easy translation to that narrative. So you know, for me, the Agatha Christie Mile is such an exciting proposition that we could, I'm talking about Lynn's sculpture trail, if we started with, you know, the Agatha Christie legacy, because that's unique to us, and you could have other sculptures on the way. I mean, you could have one of her roller skating at Princess Pier, because that's where she used to roller skate.
I think that almost solves your problem of someone walking past it and not paying attention, that
and not realizing
sculpture kind of draws the eye and almost tells the story just by being there. Not everyone's going to go on their phone and read it. Not everyone's going to go and listen to it. People who are really interested, they are, and that's fantastic. But I think it actually serves a purpose to have something that everyone can enjoy, even if it's just for a moment to look at it and understand a little bit of that culture.
Yeah.
I think what's nice about sculptures too is that they get to be commissioned. You know, that's a news, you know, there are a lot of PR points along that journey of like commissioning a sculpture. If somebody's creating the sculpture, you could visit and see the creation of it and who was the inspiration for it and tell that story. But also there's also like unveiling the sculpture. Yeah. And then forever, people will be taking selfies with that sculpture. Yeah. Selfie culture is here to stay. So yeah, there is a lot. So it is kind of a permanent kind of marker for that. And it's also so visual. You don't need to, you know, have a big board of, you know, information about it, you know, the QR code, and it speaks to you in your own language. And, you know, you can learn about it and listen and walk and experience. It's like an experience instead of like a reading something.
Yeah, that's a really important word, Lynn. The word, you know, visitor experiences, you know, we're talking about, you know, staycation's a relatively modern word, but another key word we all know, a phrase we all need to really embrace is visitor experience, because all the research that Visit England, Visit Britain are doing and are showing that people, if you like, there is a new generation of travellers that currently aren't coming here because we're not giving them enough around an experience, a cultural story.
Yeah.
We need to get better at our storytelling.
Yeah.
And I know, it's, you know, I've seen the growth of the English Riviera walking tours with Graham. And, you know, the most popular walk we do is called The Extraordinary Life of Agatha Christie. And there are people come from around the world to actually take part in that walk, to actually feel the story, learn about it, as a very keen reader of her books. So we need to sort of all start to become a bit better at our storytellings, and that's where, you know, the Geopark is working now on developing a new product called Geopark Discovery Discovery Experiences. So we were successful in securing some funding from the government, and at the moment we're working on developing some new products that will allow people to get closer to what the geopark's all about and actually take part in some experiences. So around the story, around the geology, stories around the wildlife on the geopark. But it's all that they are cultural products, and they'll be coming online for 2025.
So that's a digital product, I assume.
They will be promoted digitally.
Yeah.
But they you can actually will be able to buy them as guided tours.
Okay, oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really important is, you know, you were saying about the sculptures and PR with the commissioning and the unveiling, etc. We need to all continually develop new products in order to keep generating media attention.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, there needs to be positive media attention ongoing, and, you know, to keep pumping out positive stories about new things that are happening, positive things that are happening. Because we all know the destination has some challenges too.
Yeah,
of course. So I was just talking to, I think, Colleen, you know, do you know Colleen Smith from Devon Live?
Yes.
I think she retired recently. We just saw her at Christmas. She came over for a little kind of Torbay Hospitality Christmas gathering. Hi, Colleen. But she's got like, a really great idea. And it's about kind of, you know, the space in between the former Living Coast and kind of Hope's Nose. The space between the former Living Coast and Hope's Nose is almost like it's like a baked, hot Mediterranean kind of space that has like its own unique flora and unique plants and things there. She knows a lot about this, but we've talked about that quite a bit, and she's quite knowledgeable about that. So I think car alarm. I hope that's not you, Caroline. Yeah, she's talked about that quite a bit. And so, I think there is something there about the geopark and not just, and so, like you're saying, the animals that are there, the plants that are there, and just make it like really accessible for people. Because I think, UNESCO, people look at the word UNESCO and, you know, I would say some people might switch off because they don't know what it means, or, you know, that it's of the scientific and geological and geographic significance. But I really think that if you made it more about like the, something that people can relate to, the Mediterranean you know, climate that's there. It's like a microclimate, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, what UNESCO means is that it's very special, doesn't it?
It does.
Anywhere that's got a UNESCO badge around the world is being given to it because it's special. So this is a very special, but what we've got to get better at is communicating to visitors the special bits and make, as you say, relating it to things that, you know, we've got some of the, you know, the best seagrass beds in the southwest. We've got a growing seal population. Yeah. We've got dolphins, you know, breeding in the bay and all this sort of thing. And it's communicating those really positive things to visitors. And it's how best we do that. And a lot of that is through digital channels and social media.
Is it also, I mean, when you're saying we've got these special things, is it about tying what you were saying a second ago with the experience? Like if we've got the greatest grass beds, you know, but no one can see them. Is there any way to turn that into an experience? If we've got dolphins, is there an experience there? I'm curious if you think that there's a gap in the market for, you're saying that there's people taking people on guided tours. Do you think there's a gap in the market for much more specialized, the dolphin tour, the, you know, XYZ tour?
I think absolutely, Callum. And we've all most of us have traveled abroad.
Yeah.
And most of us have taken excursions. And, you know, what we haven't, you know, what we need to build is more excursions for visitors to take. So, I mean, Torquay Water Sports have been amazing they do a wildlife safari. There's other boat operators doing wildlife safaris as well. And, you know, Michelle takes people close into the rocks, tells them the story of the geology, and then people are seeing wildlife swimming around the smaller boat.
Yeah.
So this isn't, I'm not talking about Rapture, I'm talking about the other boats they have.
Yes. With the kayak, is that what you're talking?
No, this is the smaller...
it's a smaller rib.
Rib. Yeah. So they've started offering wildlife safaris on the smaller rib.
Right, okay.
And they've also are going to be bringing in an accessible boat for 2024, which is really fantastic. They're going to be operating a boat where people with wheelchairs and access difficulties. And that's something that needs to be highlighted to everybody as well, is as we all live longer, our access needs are growing. And one of the needs Visit England is continually reminding us all of is the need for increased accessibility for everything.
Yeah.
For cafes, for hotels, for buses, for attractions. You know, we're not very good at that, if we're honest, overall. Some people are. There is a few operators that are embracing it fully. I'd like to see a lot more.
I think definitely there's a lot of work to be done. But coming from Istanbul and traveling around different countries, I think the UK has a lot to be proud of in that perspective.
Yeah.
You know, there's my mum struggles with mobility. And it's not easy for her, but she can get to a restaurant and she can get to these places.
Mm.
Whereas in a lot of places around the world, it's
not taken seriously, is it? No.
To my grandmother-in-law, she also has issues with mobility and she doesn't have access to any restaurants or, you know, any...
Because she lives in Istanbul?
Oh, she lives very close to Istanbul, in Turkey, yeah.
Wow, so, that's unfortunate,
you know,
isn't it?
It's very difficult for her to get around comfortably. You know, here you don't even pay attention to it, but on the streets, if you have a wheelchair, you can go anywhere, basically. Mm. It's part of the infrastructure. Mm. So you're not even thinking about, you know, if there's a curb, am I going to be able to get down on the road onto the other side? It's just built into the infrastructure. Mm. But in other places, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, I noticed that moving here, that it did seem like accessible for wheelchairs, but accessibility isn't always, you know, it is of course about wheelchairs, but not everything.
It's not just about wheelchairs, is it? No.
Yeah, that's why, I think, you know what, you know, when you're talking about this Agatha Christie trail, this Agatha Christie mile from... What is it, from the Imperial
from
to the Grand?
From the Imperial to the Grand, yeah.
That's really accessible, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is, yeah. Right along the seafront. Mm. And it's got the, you know, potential. Say we could do more sculptures on the way. And then I know Matt's looking at, you know, doing some you know, we're particularly excited about the possible concept of these talking benches where you would sit on the bench and then it tells you the story at that point. And then you move along and you get the whole extraordinary story. So,
I love that idea.
Have you ever considered AR? So with Ooh. These new iPhones, and it's in a lot of other Android phones as well, but it's becoming popular because of the iPhone. You can kind of point your phone. Have you ever heard of Pokemon Go, where you can see those little creatures and you can tap them, kind of interact with them in almost real space, but it's on your phone? Has there ever been any discussions around telling the Agatha Christie story through
AR? It's called augmented reality.
I know. Yeah, I know. Matt's been looking at that.
Yeah, I think that'd be really interesting.
Go on.
No, sorry. Yeah.
No, I had an augmented reality story, but go on.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, because
mine's irrelevant.
It seems like that's where the future is going. Apple have released their own. I don't know if you've seen it. That VR headset.
Yes.
Which, if Apple's done it, it kind of tells you that's where we're all going to be in 5-10 years.
Yes, absolutely.
All,
you know,
that's going to be a very popular product. And to maybe think about how do you provide content for that product before it's dead, before everyone's doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to hold up my phone on Princess Pier and watch Agatha Christie roller skate down with her friends.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be so crazy.
Just in real time. So if it's a sunny day, you know, or if she could do it at night or whatever. Yeah. Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. And because it happens like you're saying, like on your phone. Yeah. I was just saying, if anybody can't imagine augmented reality, I was buying a sofa this year and it says, do you want to see it in your room? And I actually could hold up my phone and a little virtual sofa like plunked down in my own lounge and I could see that I wasn't going to have much room to move around it. So I had to abandon that, but yeah, it is real. And honestly, it was like a DFS on their website, so I mean it's like for I think it's becoming more common now. But I think you'd beat Isle of Wight and Bournemouth on that one there.
Yeah.
All right, don't take our ideas. All right, it's Carolyn's. It's actually Callum's. So yeah, that's brilliant.
I think embracing digital is, you know, across the board, and anything new that's coming out is, she say you could do AR with looking under the sea, you know, and actually seeing the mussel beds and seeing the seahorses. I mean, that was the beauty of Living Coast when it was open, which you could actually go and see all of that for real.
I
hope that, you know, that site gets redeveloped as quickly as possible.
Us too. We look over longingly.
Yeah. I know. We're right next to Living Coast and we look at it every day and wonder what's next for it. Do you have any insider information, Carolyn? You can trust us. We won't tell anyone.
I haven't got any detailed inside information, other than to say, you know, Torbay has recently been given over £100 million from the government in various funds and grants, and I've been involved with some of that, in that I sit on the Torbay Leadership Board and I'm chair of the Destination Management Group. So there's some very exciting things in the pipeline.
Good.
But it's, you know, what's frustrating for everybody is that managing these funds is not straightforward. You know, there's strict criteria that has to be applied. Business cases have to be approved by ministers before you can draw any money down. Very often it's match funding, and then it has to be spent within a certain time span. So it is fantastic news that we've been given this money. Fantastic news. But now it's sort of like patience is needed to make it, you know, to get it out and make it happen.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Now, you mentioned earlier that you have a little fur baby. Do you think that that's maybe a market that we could look at in terms of, I think, Callum, you brought over your cat, you've got a dog. Are people bringing their pets kind of with them on holiday? Is that kind of turning into a thing?
It's more than turning into a thing, in that the latest statistics that I saw are that 40% of the staycationers market now travel with their dogs.
That blows me away. That really blows me away.
So that's probably, it's probably gone up by about 15% since COVID. And I think, you know, COVID did have a part to play in this, because there were over 300,000 puppies bought through COVID. And I think a lot of them, bless them, were cosseted little extras to the family through what was a very challenging time. And people now are preferring to take their dogs on holiday than to put them into kennels or to leave them with friends.
Yeah.
So the dog-friendly market is really significant.
Okay.
And offers huge potential for any business that wants to sort of embrace the dog-friendly market in its true sense, both in terms of accommodation, attractions, and food and drink properties.
Looking specifically at the accommodation piece of that, if we have got B&Bs or hotels that are this year deciding we're going to be dog-friendly, what recommendations would you give them to take with that transition?
I think if you're going to do it 110%.
Yes.
And look at, there's now a lot of the tourism awards include a dog-friendly category.
Oh.
So the first thing I would do if I was looking at moving into a dog-friendly market would be to look at my competitors.
Yeah.
And to see, and the people that are winning the gold and silver Devon and Southwest awards is look at what they're doing. But it's about everything. It's about food. It's about bowls. It's about beds. It's about, you know, it's about blankets, it's about doggy biscuits, it's about the whole thing. It's about spoiling pooches.
Yes.
That's basically, yes, it's become a you know, and but it is a big market, and yeah, people will pay extra to stay at places that will look after their dogs. And it was interesting to see what Accor did in Paignton when they made the decision to make the Mercure dog friendly. Because they knew how big a market it is.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's a pet-friendly hotel that we helped over in Paignton. Do you know Vicky and Lee at St. Wenard's?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
yes.
They are pet-friendly and they totally lean into it. So I'd say if you were looking at, you know, making your B&B pet-friendly, to have a look at their social media. They really celebrate all their little doggy customers.
Yeah.
And they have little doggy towels and treats and bowls and all of the things that you would expect for, like you're saying, spoiled pooches. That's great. And look at your competitors, but also look at the award winners. Like, what are they really doing that's different? Mm. Bickley Mills, pet-friendly. I know there's a few places. Below Decks really makes a big deal. They have, like, doggy ice creams and doggy sausages and things. Yeah, you can get a doggy sausage down at Below Decks for like a pound or something, and then like your breakfast arrives and then your dog's breakfast arrives. It's great.
Well, whilst we're on that topic, Shoreline, absolute shout out
Shoreline,
to them.
Shoreline,
they've got doggy martinis. And
Shoreline is amazing.
We love Shoreline.
So I was recently there with Barney, a collie. It's my daughter's dog, but he spends quite a bit of time with us. And so there was a menu given to him.
Yeah.
And then a menu given to us.
I love it.
Dog first.
So he has actually got a doggy menu.
I love it.
He gets so excited when he gets to the steps to go up to Shoreline. He knows what's going to happen. So,
amazing.
I think there has been a major, major shift.
Yeah.
And I think if not everybody's going to embrace it, but it is a significant market. And the thing about it, it's a year-round market.
Yeah.
So people will come away for short breaks any time of the year if they can bring their dog.
And
of course that's when it fits really well here with all the beach access,
mm-hmm,
because you can find an empty beach at low tide. So doggy walkies is in the winter is brilliant.
And all the walking trails too.
So
you know,
do you think that there's a midterm future where Paignton Beach is during summer going to be dog friendly?
I
have my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I know. So, Goodrington North, isn't that the only one?
Yeah. So Callum, I'm going to say something. I think we should review our dog beach access in the summer. But I think what we should do is take a leaf out of what they do in Cornwall. So we regularly go to Perranporth for our family breaks with the dog. And you're allowed access to the beach all year round. But in the summer, it's between 10 and 6 or 10 and 4, you can't go on the beach with the dog.
Sure.
So,
but
it means you can still do that morning walk and you can still do that evening walk.
Yeah.
But during the main part of the day, it's family time.
Yeah.
And it works.
That's great.
And it works. Yeah. So I just think we need to just review it.
Yes.
I think it's time to review our dog access policy on the beaches in the summer. Yeah.
Those words are going to be like candy to my sister's ears, who cannot go anywhere without her little pooch, even if she's just driving to Sainsbury's or something.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's at the Costero Lounge, I heard, is really dog friendly. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of that on kind of like Spotted Paint In, where everybody just loves bringing their dogs to the new restaurant. So yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've identified kind of, well, roughly three markets here. So you've got the people that are interested in culture and kind of the storytelling of the area. You've got these young, active people that may be bringing a whole roof rack of equipment and kit down with them, and boots and mud and all of that. And then you've got this, sand, of course. Then you've got this kind of dog-friendly audience. So what advice would you give to like a hotelier or like a B&B owner to try to tap into some of this? Maybe is there some kind of improvement that you could be made to your facilities or to your marketing or your offer to try to attract these people? Working with you, you know, to try to, you know, it can't just be one voice coming out of the void. Everybody's got to pull together and everybody's got a social media channel. Yeah. So what can we do to kind of market ourselves more to this like younger audience, younger, more active audience?
Yeah, I think what, you know, we've got over nearly 70,000 followers on social media.
Wow.
So that's across all channels, Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. And my big call out to everybody is to contribute to our collection of user generated content.
Oh.
So this is, you know, the great shots that we all take on the mobile phone of that sunset, or, you know, the dog with the ice cream, or somebody having a great glass of wine overlooking the beach or whatever. And if you always use the big call out from me today is please always use hashtag English Riviera.
Oh, that's a good advice.
If you use hashtag English Riviera, Steve Pearce, who's our social media guru, will pick up any pictures, and then he will then approach you about uploading that shot onto a platform called Crowdrift.
Okay.
And then we can use that for destination marketing. And going back to what Lynn said, it is about collaboration. Mm. You know, the bid company markets the bay on about £500,000 a year. And over 5 years, we generate around £3 million. We're in the second bid, so we would have raised around £5 million over the last 7-8 years. Now, but we're one organisation with 3 full-time staff. That's all there is. So we need the collaboration of all the businesses to share with us your great photos that you take on your mobile phone.
Mm,
and then we can share those with those 68,000 followers, who then share again and get that, you know, 3-4 million reach that we regularly get on the posts that we put out, the English Riviera posts. And it is it's those shots rather than the traditional photographer shots that are getting the likes and the shares on the social media channels. So always use hashtag English Riviera. Share with us, you know, if you put up your great shots on your own social media channels, if you put hashtag English Riviera, Steve will be able to follow you, and then we can, you know, start to collate photography. But if you go onto the English Riviera website, which had achieved over 1 million users last year, it's still our main asset as a resource of information. You will see on every page galleries of user-generated content called My Riviera.
Okay.
And it's that content that is attracting the new visitors, the young actives, the cultural explorers.
Oh.
You know, it's really, really important to us, these creative assets. And also, if people share with us reels that they've taken on their phones, we can put those out on social media as well. But the English Riviera Facebook following, I'd say, is about 68,000.
Oh, that's incredible.
Do you guys actively engage with influencers? Do you actively have an influencer marketing strategy?
Yeah, we are building an influencing strategy, Callum.
Okay.
So we're currently looking at the moment at lining up different influencers that we want to work with for the different campaigns.
Yeah.
So for the family campaign, there's some great local people around children and you know, mummies type things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're building up influencers around the different campaigns for the on the water and the and the spa as well. So
great.
No, your influence is really important moving forward.
It is.
So are you guys looking at just local influencers, or are you looking at bringing people from other cities to Torbay?
At the moment, we're trying to build the local influencers to work with us to extend the reach of the posts. But ultimately, yes, it would be to bring bigger influencers. Yeah. But, you know, there is a budget consideration to some of the bigger influencers that you have to consider as well.
Yeah, with that, from my experience and what I've seen, when you have something that you can offer an influencer that they actually can't get somewhere else, then they're willing to do it for just a freebie, essentially. Yeah. If you're offering something that they can get somewhere else, then this is their job and they need to get paid for that. But if you've got an experience or a product or something that's really, really unique that they're going to benefit by having this content on their platform.
Right, make it valuable for them.
Then you can start looking at bringing people from, you know, London or Birmingham or Manchester, which their hub will be, they'll have followers from all over, but they'll probably have a hub from that city that they're in, which I think would be
you're absolutely right. Yeah. And it is about building a package, an experiential package that, as you say, they really want to come here. Last summer we did something great with an influencer that came in, and Sean took them out on the SUP boards.
Great.
And then we went down and did barbecue on the beach with a canoe safari, you know, a kayak safari. And it's about, and then we did a wine tasting and et cetera, et cetera. So you need to build up, as you say, that sort of package that excites them enough to want to come here.
Yes.
And also for them to appreciate that this place is something different than maybe what their perception was before we invited them.
Yeah, exactly. Have you considered partnering with some other brands, like a SUP brand, or like even like a car brand? Like if you got a strategic partnership or something with like Mercedes, and then had like a convertible, and got some influencers down here, and they could just like drive around, visit all of the little towns, go to the, but you know, like working in, it would be like a partnership with them, where they're promoting both, you know what I mean, the coastal drive over to Brixham or something like that, and then also obviously the destination itself.
Yeah, I love that idea, Lynn. I really do. I really love that idea, and I think it's something we have worked with Ocean in the past on photo shoots. And taken them up and used the turquoise open top mini in certain shoots. But I love the idea of doing a coastal drive and with an influencer driving. In fact, that could be part of the experience, the chance for them to drive the car. So
a hotel stay, rental car. Yeah,
definitely.
And then, all of the experiences that you set up. Yeah. Oh, that would be amazing.
And Ocean work with us. I think that could work really well.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, great. So
I feel
great.
Like we're on like a little idea board here.
Absolutely. I mean, you never stop thinking, any of us, of new ideas and coming up with things. And
it's brilliant. I just wanted to quickly touch on hotels. I know that, so you listened to the Andy Banner Price interview. It brought all of us to tears. Like, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. I mean, his story and where he's come from and where he's headed and the challenges that he's faced is just an absolutely incredible episode. So please have a listen. But, you know, when Andy was telling us that story, he said that he was kind of on the fence about Torbay and then stopped in to have a conversation with you or rang you. What do you think was your final piece of advice that really tipped the scales there to have a boutique hotel?
When Andy came, I think it was his energy and passion. You just knew that whatever he was going to do was going to work. I mean, they'd had that, you know, very successful property in North Wales.
Yes.
And when somebody, over the years I've been here, I've had various people come to me with ideas and say, do you think this could work, Carolyn? And again, I suppose because of my association with Visit England and seeing the market trends and the research, he had done his research as well. And that's what I would say to any business that's thinking of trying something new, is just make sure you do your research. It's out there. There's a whole bank of research to be had, particularly on the Visit England business website. And he had done it, and this adult-only boutique B&B, when he came, nobody else had done it. And I remember when, likewise, I remember when Brett had a conversation with me about Lincoln Hall and that becoming an adult spa. And I said, go for it. It's absolutely the right thing to do.
Yep. Yeah.
So you just know sometimes, you know, to have a bit of a niche sets you apart from your competition. And, you know, there are over 300 B&Bs across the resort. So you've got to stop and think about what's your point of differentiation. As you say, it might be dog friendly, it might be child friendly, it might be adult friendly, it might be going full hog and becoming a boutique, a top quality 5-star boutique hotel. And for them to have won the best B&B in the world for this resort was a most incredible accolade.
Absolutely.
We were just so proud of them, so proud of them to have done that. We'd never ever won that award before, so it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic.
In the world. It's stunning. Yeah. And 2 years in a row. Yeah. How did they do it? I don't know. Yeah, they're just really unique. Yeah, it's just so unique to the Bay. It's definitely worth talking about. So, yeah. So we've all got our marching orders now. We need to all go out and hashtag English Riviera. I always tag in my Riviera. I send a tag, posts and everything.
You can do my That's Riviera, amazing. But hashtag English Riviera means we pick up everything.
Okay. Yes.
And just to say, if we all use that hashtag, it just consolidates everything for us. So
that's fantastic.
I don't want anybody. It's sometimes you see, I don't know, 30 different hashtags on a post. And I look at it and I just think none of those are actually going to help us right now on the destination marketing, because none of them are actually using the brand. So my big call out is please use the brand. The brand is English Riviera.
Okay,
right. Perfect. We've got a little challenge for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
To play either or. It's a new game.
It's a new segment of the podcast. We often say, what's your favorite place to, favorite restaurant, place to go get a burger? For this season, we're going to change things up and we're going to do either or.
Okay.
Either
or.
Listening in, you can go onto our Instagram and you can play along at home. So you can see how your answers would pan out.
Would stack up, right. So, Carolyn, here's your first question. Would you rather have a bottomless brunch with your girlfriends or afternoon high tea with Joanna Lumley?
I've met Joanna Lumley. She's amazing. Afternoon tea with Joanna Lumley.
Okay, right. I think we need a ding here. Right. I think it's D for ding. No.
It's not D for ding. It's definitely not. It's B for ding.
B for ding. B for bell. So would you rather take... It's question number two. Would you rather take a walk in Cockington or take a ferry to Brixham?
I love being on the water. I'm sorry, Yay! Marissa, at Cockington, any opportunity to get on the water, ferry to Brixham.
Oh, okay. Amazing. Right. So would you rather go crabbing in Brixham or fishing off of Haldon Pier?
Fishing off Haldon Pier.
Yes.
And hopefully to get a mackerel, because what I love to do is to barbecue a mackerel at home in the garden.
Oh,
yes. Oh, nice. I know.
So if I get out on any boat trip and just catch a few mackerel, there's something special about barbecuing them at home.
Yes. Oh, very I nice. Love that. That's great.
Okay, a little late ding. Nice.
That's a good one. Right. So would you prefer to see a DJ at a festival or a rock band in a pub?
a rock band at a pub.
Yes. Oh, Carolyn, boy, I'm feeling these vibes. You and me at the spinning wheel. I think Joey and the Lips are coming to the spinning wheel.
Joey and the Lips are great.
Yes, okay, right. Joey and the Lips.
Ding, ding, yes.
And Dean at the spinning wheel. He runs, it's a fantastic business. It really is. Yeah.
It's such good vibes.
A rock band means you can get a bit closer than the DJ, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I love that. Right. So we're going to see you at Joey and the Lips on the dance floor.
Joey and the Lips. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. And right, final question. Would you rather do paddleboarding out to London Bridge or take a morning dip with the Chunky Dunkers?
Right, so I'm going to have to go for a morning dip with the Chunky.
You've got
to
try it now. Yeah, you've got to try it. Go for team.
I have done the dip at Beacon Cove.
Yeah.
I can't do stand-up paddleboarding because I've got two replacement knees.
Oh, no.
I can't. So I have an accessibility issue with SUPs.
This is why we need that trail.
Can you do it if you're sat down? Like a kayak, basically.
Yeah, I could sit down and use it as a kayak. But there's no stand-up for me, I'm afraid.
She wants to hang out with the Dunkers or maybe over at Beacon Cove. Yeah. No, that's brilliant. That's great. Thanks so much. Do you have any shout-outs to your team?
Just keep on swimming, girls.
I love that. Anybody you'd like
keep
to mention?
Swimming.
You need to mention them by name. So Kelly's been over here loads of times. Hi, Kelly. Who are the team members?
So the full-time team members are myself and Katrine Harrington, who looks after visitor information, and Alison Bayliss, who's our communications expert. And then in the Visitor Information Centre, we have Maria, who is the wife of Graham Kerr. And we have Rachel and we have Fiona, who work at the weekends because the Visitor Centre is open 7 days a week.
Mm.
So we've got a team of people that work through there as well. And then we've got specialists like Kelly, who works on Seafood Feast, and Graham on walking, and we've got other people, Gina, who works with us on digital marketing, Gina Franchi.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and Steve, who looks after all our social media.
Oh, right.
So they're all sort of contracted to do specific projects.
Mm. Okay, so they're not in the office full time.
No.
Not all of them, but met Katrine before. Yes. I met her at the Bridge Group.
The Bridge Group. So Katrine, we won gold. We got the gold award for the best visitor information centre.
Hey,
in Devon.
I think it was a round of applause for that one.
We're hoping that we're going to get selected, get an award at Southwest Awards as well. But we, they personally talk to around 70,000 people a year.
Wow.
A lot of people come in to ask about the number 12 bus, which actually goes every 12 minutes. That's why it's called the number 12 bus.
Oh, is it? I never knew that. That's great.
You know what? You need to do a marketing campaign on that. This is the number 12 information bureau here.
It is a number. Stagecoach are brilliant. They sponsor the visitor centre, and so do the Dartmouth Steam Railway and Boat Company as well. So, we do really try to offer quality visitor information. So, it's by phone, across the counter. But if I could, I'd love to publish a book of the questions that are asked.
Go on, give us a little preview. What's the one that's niggling at you?
Well, Katrine had the most bizarre question about slugs.
This is the flora and fauna part that everyone wants to know.
So this is part of the wild campaign, I think. And where this person could go and see some slugs.
What?
Love it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Did she have an answer for them?
Yes, we suggested Paignton Zoo in the reptile section.
That is a great suggestion.
We try to be as helpful as possible, but which we obviously do, but there are sometimes you have to bite your lip at the questions asked, but
that's hilarious.
But it's lovely when people come in. I think the best thing is when people come in and say, what can we do today?
Yeah.
Mm. And we've got free publications, maps and guides, and you start to talk to them about what they like to do. Yes. Do they have a car? Don't they have a car? and what would they like to do, how long have they got, and then you sort of try and you sort of suggest an itinerary for the day of places they can go and see and do.
Yeah.
And it's when they come back in the next day and said, that was a fantastic day we had yesterday.
Isn't that so rewarding?
Yeah, thank you so much. Nice. Where else can we go to today?
That's great.
Because otherwise I think people could just end up sort of just wandering around. And it's, but I think, you know, it's that key question is, what do you like to do?
Yes.
Don't ever assume you know what somebody wants to do.
I mean, that just reminds me of all my years in sales, where if, you know, the person who's going to succeed in that kind of role is someone who can sit, stand there for half an hour, really understand the person's needs.
Yeah.
Let's say if they're coming in for a pair of headphones or something, understanding where they're going to listen to the music, what kind of music do they, all those questions, understand them, and then you can just give the recommendation at the end.
Yeah.
That's very rewarding. When
it's when they come back in, and particularly we spend a lot of time with international visitors. You know, you think they've travelled from all around the world to come here, at great expense, and then it's just making sure that they, you know, don't miss the high spots, really. So, but no, the girls are really very well trained, and we deserved gold, actually.
Yes, damn straight.
Heck yeah. Nice one. Yeah, I would love to invite, you know, the representatives from the Tourist Information Bureau onto the podcast.
Yeah.
Could we get your promise today that we'll make that happen?
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, Katrine and Alison could come across. They're just really, you know, really good people to talk to. And, you know, they're the people behind the scenes just working. I mean, at the moment, Alison's working on reprinting all the visitor guides. You know, we're talking about, you know, hundreds and hundreds of properties that all have got to have listings, descriptions, correct, you know, checked, etc. And then, so there's masses and masses of work the BID does. We do now send out a monthly newsletter, and we get around a 40-50% opening rate, which is great to see. So it's sharing with people what we're doing.
And I would imagine just a piece to business owners, local business owners, that the more that they can supply you guys with for those listings, everyone's job is easier, and the work is done better.
You know,
if you're really forthcoming with your descriptions and your photos and all of that stuff, it makes Katrina's job, I'm assuming,
a lot easier.
She doesn't have to chase people. No. She doesn't have to do a bunch of research, because she just has the, I'm assuming it works this way.
It does. And every bid payer has a full page on the website.
Yeah.
The website's got a million people looking at it every year. And it's, you know, we want the owners of the businesses to check those pages, you know, their opening times, their rates, their descriptions, upload any new videos they've got, etc. So that the website is the best showcase we've all got to sell the English Riviera, and it's, you know, those businesses that put more in do get more out.
Yes,
definitely. And I think, you know, everybody's got their own login, so get involved. Make this part of your spring clean. If you're out doing a deep clean, you know, do a digital one as well.
Yeah.
Make sure that your listing's up to date. Get logged in. And if you need media assets, you know, you can contact the bid company for access to their media library, or go and take your own and then share it back to English Riviera. It's a relationship that you're invested in, and why not get the most out of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very well said, Lynn.
Amen. I think that's a beautiful place to end it. What do you think?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on, Carolyn.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's all about positivity for the future. Yeah. This is a great place.
100%.
Amazing. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a good weekend.
Subscribe.